Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Tonight, our speaker is Travis. To unmute Travis. And his topic today will be, how are we doing? And Travis has been practicing at Canando for a number of years. How long has it been, Travis, since you've been at Canando?
About 6 years.
Yeah, so I think most everyone already knows Travis. So thank you for offering to speak with us tonight, Travis. And I'll hand it over to you.
Thanks, Bonnie. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, great. Well, it's nice that we can get together with technology like this. It's a difficult situation and it seems to continue to deepen. And many people have died and left us. And we're physically separated from people that we love. And we want so badly to see and to physically hold. There's no shortage of struggle and suffering. And that goes on even with our best interventions and efforts. Our inherent need for sources of truth and connections creep into more personal aspects of our lives. How are we doing is a question that is on the agenda at each Canando board meeting. And I've been thinking about that question for some time. When we have that time in the board meetings, oftentimes we don't. Things get very busy, but when we take that time and people share about their lives, it always strikes me as such a contrast to the doings and the discussions that preceded it. And we seem to get predominantly occupied with for the previous hour and a half or so. You know, there's a confluence of three interplaying elements that are fundamental to our lives. The first is autonomy, our sense of integrity of self, I would say. That's not the full definition of it, but that's maybe a good approximation. And the second is competition or contention. Then the third is collaboration. And I feel that this quarantine sort of shifts us toward, but not directly, but it skews our lives towards autonomy. But that's somewhat oblique to this practice, which is also living with those contradictions and accepting them. And letting them be, which is one of the most human activities that there is, living with those contradictions. And how are we doing is also an appropriate question if you wanted to create a pandemic report card, medical response, statistics about transmission rates, unemployment. The list could go on, but experts agree that we will eventually graduate from this, but we'll remain changed by the experience. And of course that's so. It's a profound change. It's a disruption. My team at work has started to go back in this week. And at the same time, my wife was directed earlier today to work at 90% of what she's working at, effective immediately. It's easy to calculate the bottom line of a decision like this into a spreadsheet or a project plan, but it's something else entirely to actually do that. With our solitude, it occurred to me that this question stands as a checkpoint to leave the realm of the doing. The sort of are we getting things done question that can nag at us. So I thought about another question that's somewhat similar. What's happening? Do you know that intro to Marvin Gaye's What's Going On? In the beginning where the guy says, what's happening? But still closer, I think the question I would ask is, what are we being? What are we being? Which might sound a little odd. But if you think about it, it's why we practice. To walk that path of the Buddha, you have to ask yourself this question in one form or the other. And I wish more people would. Even though much of our typical days are concerned moment to moment towards taking care of details and fixing things, what's the matter at hand here? And we say it like that sometimes to move existence up front and center, to make things clear cut. And just that expectation that I'm going to give a talk moves us into that mind that conventional language occupies. So don't try too hard to strictly learn something tonight, okay? What are we being? Well, our current situation may be the opportunity we need to recognize that our lives extend far beyond a series of problems to solve. And accepting this, human beings can relate to each other and to their world in a more sensible way. Our lives are really so vast, you know? My dog is so much happier after a month of being with his family all day. We forget what we are being when we engage in some particular task, and that's okay. Our common we, our usness, is so visible right now in our stillness. I don't mean this strictly in a metaphysical sense. I mean it really, realistically, like look around. We miss this when we're striving for things, sometimes obsessively. Even though Zen is not popular, traditions like ours endure because they serve people in an essential way of being and becoming that is revealed in stark relief by something like this quarantine. The restrictive ordering of society has released some hold over our minds and our lives. The thieves of humanity appear, at least temporarily, at bay, and nature has been there for us all along. I sit in my yard now. There's a perfect spot out there for me and my dog. The best time is at dusk. I was up on the Sierra snowpack with him on Sunday, and I thought about that snow melting on one side of the Pacific divide and on the other, and what would happen to that water. Quietists have been around in various forms and in every major religion throughout history, and routinely with some difficulty from the establishment. I've been impressed with the Christian Quakers who have some traditions that might seem familiar to us. They meet in plain rooms without pulpits. They refer to their silent meetings as hearing God's still small voice. There are no readings or sermons because Quakers wait for God's guidance. And value then is placed upon spoken messages that come from the heart and are prompted by the spirit, although silence is also valued. one measure of any community could be what you are capable of sharing, even voicing what you're not sure you can say, and what you're unsure others can hear. And those two concepts are not distinct. Our Zen tradition is heavily influenced by perhaps the most well-known quietism tradition of all, Taoism. When times are good, I sometimes get lulled into feeling that we never need that much external oversight. But there are several chapters in the middle of the 2,500-year-old Tao Te Ching that approach the subject of human governance. And this is one of them. A great nation flows down to be the world's pool, the female under heaven. In stillness, the female constantly overcomes the male in stillness, takes the low place. Therefore, a great nation lowers itself and wins over a small one. A small nation keeps itself low and wins over a great one. Sometimes the low wins, sometimes staying low wins. A great nation desires nothing more than to unite and protect people. A small nation desires nothing more than to enter the service of people. When both get what they wish, the great one should be low. Now is our chance to reconnect with the big mind that arrives through this quiet and stillness. Eventually settling into the direct affairs of nature, which expand and will contract in turn. The silence brings an intensely musical mind without interruption. The Aristotelian and Newtonian ways where it's all separate are letting go. And we have relativity where you are in it, not distracted, engaged with your life. Then metaphysically, it can seem clearer now how we are connected. When I came back into Mountain View Monday, the bees didn't want me in their backyard. They were healthy. But when we're as busy as bees, it hurts the bees too, I think. In one of my favorite talks, Suzuki Roshi began the lecture by saying that he hoped that we can find a way to be honest and direct. And a student very sweetly asked, "Why is that so hard?" And he said, "Because we need to suffer more, I think. We will not lose in suffering, but if we try to escape from it, we will be trapped by it." Another way I heard this idea expressed last week is, you can change who you are, but you can't run from yourself. Our practice supports us in this way, to stick with it. When we are still, we have a chance to accept ourselves. A lot of traditional Buddhist thought put an emphasis towards the eventual decline of Buddhism, that gradually over the course of hundreds or thousands of years, that monks eventually couldn't practice with the same quality that the original ancestors did. Our way at Canando is more humanistic. It lays out a path that aligns with human nature as generally good. And that's no small shift of perspective. Yet there's an ongoing relationship each of us have with our understanding of others, both to individual human beings and the groups that govern us. When we get let down by others, it can be a natural reaction to become more oriented towards human endeavors. Don't just sit there, do something. And that is, I think, our more mainstream culture of progress, this kind of focus towards things independent. This kind of focus towards things can be independent of how you view humanity. You know, there's those mid-century stories like the sci-fi kind of Ray Bradbury kind of stories about space travel where the astronauts can't come home. And the travelers are all alone in a spaceship going somewhere unfamiliar and their life is completely committed, maybe heroically so, to going someplace that's ultimately a hostile environment. With their eyes always fixed on the horizon, I think in our social optimism, we prize reaching off in some, reaching some far off vision of our better selves. Our study of human beings, our Zen study of human beings, starts with ourselves right now. And then it proceeds to an interest in those close to us. And even in that study, acts of terrible hostility still arise. Meanness that the wise would reprove of, probably. And this direct experience of humanity that we experience is a challenge for us. It's a challenge for me. How do we stay hopeful for a world with so much difficulty? Do we have to adapt or refine our expectations? In weathering this disruption, I think there are opportunities for a new understanding that have been presented unannounced to us. Why should we have rules? Why should we have schedules? What is really essential activity? And who does it serve? Does it serve us? What role should we play? How can we help establish and maintain communities? And what is a community even? How does our attitude of openness and sense of conviction interact inside of us as our lives unfold in new and sometimes unexpected directions? So I think I'll stop there and open it up for a conversation with all of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Travis.
I have a comment. I'm struggling with fear, but it's a strange kind of fear when I'm out walking, and I really do have to walk every day, so I have to be very careful about where I'm going, neighborhood and so forth. And I see people who are a little oblivious, unconscious every day about distancing. And it's upsetting. It's what we know is out there that so many are unconscious and are not aware of what they're doing. And so these judgments immediately come up, and it really just ends up harming me ultimately, as I get upset about it. And so I wonder if anyone has any thoughts on that, on how they're handling similar situations.
I guess I can say that I think about this topic quite a lot because, on one hand, we've had a lot of restrictions placed upon us. But then on the other, it's a disruptive time, and there is a whole range of human competence out there, ability to manage and adapt, and then our own ability to be compassionate with ourselves and with others, because the fear is ratcheted way up. And none of us know how this is going to play out. So there's an uncertainty as well. It's not a simple, right and wrong. We're learning about what the right course is for our community and for our society, There are many because it is so complex. There are many ways that we can get off the track, I would say.
Yeah, it's easy to be judgmental right now, I think, more than usual. I mean, normally I don't seem to have this problem, but it's very easy to slip into that. I like your comment, Travis, about compassion, and that even though some people just aren't choosing to be present in situations, that, you know, there's a reason why. I think that's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Teresa, I think.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Sorry, I am in the darkness. Thank you, Travis, for your talk. I enjoyed it. And, you know, related to what Elizabeth is saying, and something that is in my mind lately. Yeah, I think you're right, Elizabeth. I think we are under so much pressure, you know. A lot of people are, well, in Spain, it's even more restrictive because people have to stay inside their houses. So I think about, you know, sometimes I encountered, the other day I was driving and a guy was very mad at me for no reason. So I tried to stay calm because I think, wow, people must be going through so much pressure, like, you know, trapping small apartments maybe with two or three children all day without being able to go out. So I tried to just not to react. But then the other thing related to what you were saying, Travis, you know, you were saying that this is a moment to rethink, why do we have rules? Why, you said something else. What is essential? What is our essential activity? And I wonder if, I hope this is really transformative. It seems clear that it's going to change us because we're going through something that we have never experienced before. But could this really be transformative? Or, in, you know, once we gradually go back to normal, we will behave as we have been behaving. The other day I went for a walk near my house. There's a remote forest. And I saw that some people just throw away some plastic bags. You know, maybe we're also placing too much hope in that, you know, things will be different and we will adjust behaviors that we shouldn't be having. When I saw those bags, I was like, ah, oh, again, you know? So, I mean, it's a question that we don't have an answer to, but I wonder if this is gonna be transformative. I talked to a recruiter the other day who works for a big international consulting company.
Yeah.
He was telling me how venture capital, you know, firms are waiting for anxiously, to, you know, all the bargains that are gonna be out there once this crisis is over. So, I don't know. Something that is being in my mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, I haven't actually come across someone who in person that's been sick. I've been on the phone with people who've been sick, and so on some level, it's a little abstract. You know, we're doing all of this work to quarantine, and it's not in my experience that it's real, right? So I have to think also that's one of the unique things about humans too, is that we can believe in things that we get through our conversations and through our news, and that it's one of our strengths, you know, as a species. So, you know, to Elizabeth's message earlier, you know, I just don't know to what extent my sense of that and perspective is shared by other people. If it's not real, if it's not directly in their experience, they can't really support it in the ways that other people can. And that's hard because I've heard it over and over. We're all in this together and we're all connected. But ironically, we're actually not together. Right. So it's like a fiction, but it's really real. Like, that's why I have hope, Teresa, is that you can get a little cynical about that, but experiences like this can change the culture, I think.
Thanks, Travis. I think we have a question from Let me.
Yeah, thanks, Bonnie. Hey, Travis, thanks for your talk. I wonder if you'd be willing to share it. There were so many different nuggets. And I was like, ooh, I want to think about that and that, but I couldn't quite catch them all.
Sure. Yeah, I can share it.
Yeah. And towards the end, you mentioned reconsidering our need for rules and schedules and keeping what's essential. That piece I remember because it was right at the end. And for me personally, this has been a time to consider all those questions that you were asking, as well as just pausing and taking better care of myself, my health, my physical health. And I know for me personally that these things are gonna stick. Just because I'm seeing so many benefits from them and starting to create habits out of them.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Diane, and then Dave.
Hi, everyone. Oh, sorry. Is there somebody else? So I have a lot of random thoughts. I was thinking about Elizabeth saying difficult to be compassionate, but I think we're in a state of fear. And I think that makes us kind of tuck in and be judgmental and want to lash out in some ways. I hope that this experience will change us. I'm thinking of 9/11 and what a dramatic thing that was. And while we weren't here in California directly affected by it, it was a really big, major thing and did strike a lot of fear in all of us. And I don't feel good about what happened after that. I feel like the whole world was rallying around us for the horrible thing that happened to us. But then we went to war, you know? It didn't result in a good, positive, loving, compassionate thing. And, you know, it's true, we were attacked, but we're being attacked now as well. It's by a virus. But I think somehow a positive, good thing has to come from this. People are, even though we're not personally involved, like you say, Travis, I don't know anyone personally who has become ill. Having been a nurse, I've thought about how I could go back to work and want to do something, but it's true. I don't know anyone personally who's become ill, but we're all kind of fearful that it could happen to us. And when we go out, we're a little suspicious about people who aren't wearing masks or observing the things that they should do. But we need to just do the right thing and take care of ourselves. For myself, being at home alone, I live alone, I'm used to being alone. A lot of the my own personal definition is being a human being is difficult for me. I'm a human doing. I define myself by what I've accomplished in a given day, whether it's cleaning my house or taking care of my grandchildren. And I think a lot of us define ourselves by what our work is, what our tasks are, instead of just being. And this has sort of forced me to just be. So that was a very good point. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, human beings versus human doings. That's, you know, to do the right thing, sometimes we slow down and keeping our minds still enough in this very confusing time. I think we can benefit each other in ways that are not traditional for people want to help. You know, you as a nurse, you're a caregiver. So it's difficult to quarantine and to not actively be doing something. It's unfamiliar, but I still feel like the world is a healthy place. Yes, there's this virus. We've had viruses before, maybe not in living memory like this. But if you know, one of the reasons I feel like we were hit early here, and I actually left pretty early and left town pretty early, is a lot of my neighbors, you know, travel internationally every month, and I think a lot of the corporations in our area knew this, and so they were some of the first companies to shut down, you know, their offices and to try to, you know, keep people as isolated as they could in those, like, kind of in that first or second week of March, which, you know, it's really a testament to the kind of information that we had, that maybe we underestimate the good that it probably ended up doing. That it wasn't, that the problem hasn't been worse than it is.
Dave?
Well, yeah, what Diane and Travis just said leads right into what I was wanting to say, which is I think there are a number of ways that this experience could have some benefit to it. Obviously, there are a lot of downsides to this. I mean, there's a lot of sickness, a lot of death, a lot of suffering, both physical suffering, and also there's going to be a lot of economic suffering. And the whole idea that we're all in this together and trying to cut down on the spread of the virus and everything, that's something that you hear all the time. There's another aspect that we've been talking about, and I don't think it really gets any attention at all in the public discussion that I've heard so far. And that is this idea that maybe this can shift focus a little bit away from the frantic, you know, fear that you're not doing the top thing on your to-do list right now, and that you've got to be frantically doing and accomplishing all day long. Travis sort of summarized this with the old saying, don't just sit there, do something. Some of you may be familiar with Sylvia Boorstein's book on meditation. The title is, don't just do something, sit there. And I think that's a lesson that some of us may very well take away from this experience, but I certainly don't hear it discussed at all in public.
Thanks, Dave.
Brenda?
Yes. So I like the comment, Travis, about that you can change yourself, but you can't run away from it. Very nice, very nice. And I was hoping you could say a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah, my daughter Lucy is really into the Clone Wars, it's a Star Wars animated series, and it's coming out every Friday. And Friday at 5, when we finish work in now school, she's like, "Dad, we have to watch it." And so at the beginning, when the credits, the Star Wars music comes, that's what came up. And I was like, that's exactly what Suzuki Roshi was saying, just written in a slightly different way. Yeah, I'm talking about you. She's doing animated art with the hero of the story, Ahsoka.
There's there,
I'll show it. Yeah. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, nice.
Nice. Thank
this
you.
This is I have a pretty small townhouse, and this is the one spot in the house where I've kind of got my own nook. This is my chair and my personal space. So, but they're never far away.
Nice. Thank you. There's one more thing I'd like to share about something that my boss said, which was sort of interesting. I'm still trying to figure out what to think about it, but he's a very intelligent man, and has multiple board specializations in 4 different kinds of medicine. And during our last town hall meeting, he says, including intensive care and all of that. And I don't know if some of you might have read recently that people, that the whole intensive care and intubation and all of that is being totally rethought for the corona crisis and the corona patients. But he said, we're only beginning to date this virus. He says, we're only in the dating phase with this virus. And yes, we can beat it, but we're going to need to become very intimate with it before we do. I thought that was a very interesting analogy. And I was a little bit thinking also of this kind of issue of our problems that, that what you were saying, that we can change, but we can't run away from it. That maybe that we need to become very intimate with our problems before we can get beyond them.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. The difficult path that sometimes when you're sick, you've got to put up with some, you've got to suffer a little bit to actually get healthy again. Because I think the intellect just wants the quick and easy solution. And if I think about my last month or so, as much as I yearn for that sort of real existence, the digital life of looking at the news, of constant meetings, the sort of squeeze that happens with work, and I'm lucky to be working, but at the same time, it's been a kind of distortion where, my daily life is turning more social, not as deep, not as committed. And it's a kind of unhinging, where I think we know that, and this is what I was trying to say earlier, that this is a real opportunity to kind of get deeper and to coexist with each other on a level that's beyond the intellect, that intimate level.
Thank you.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, Travis, you just reminded me when you said work. Earlier you mentioned that your wife was asked to work 90%. I didn't understand the implication. So was it that it's a positive thing and they're asking her to take care of herself? Or is it that some employers are trying to limit the amount people are able to work?
they're trying to, I think they're trying to limit the amount that people are going to work, because they just don't, they're uncertain about what, you know, the quarterly, you know, expenses are going to be relative to earnings and things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a funny thing because, you know, we work, and I can sort of imagine half time, and I can imagine even three quarters time, like, you know, there'd be a little bit of a modification to the schedule, but 90% is a little tough because, you know, that's pretty close to the, you could just say, well, I'm going to cut your pay by 10% and be honest about it, you know?
Yeah, that sounds pretty bogus.
Does anyone else have a question or comment?
I wanted to share a beautiful story. Someone sent me a philosophy and that stated we shouldn't be alarmed by the shutdown, that another way to look at it is that all of these people, all of these homes and businesses around that are quiet now is an act of love, that this is an act of love that each person is choosing to comply with. And I thought that was really great, rather than, you know, stepping out and seeing empty streets. It's really an act of love that this society is so united in helping each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and in being in close quarters with my family, I really do feel our relationships have gotten stronger as well. You know, I really value the closeness. You saw Lucy come in earlier. This has really been a blessing in that respect. And the shutdown, she was having a tough time with school anyway. And this might be the beginning of some very positive things as a result. You know, it's like a little bit like a practice period, you know. We've limited our activity and we have to learn a new pattern and habit and way of being intimate with each other.
Right.
The point about limiting your activity, and I think there was something you said earlier about being still and being quiet. I will give you still. Quiet, I'm not sure is exactly how I would describe my domestic situation at the moment. I think this one, on one level, this has contained everybody physically, and so there's some commonality there. What you're trying to contain and how, what's the word I'm looking for, porous that barrier is to the outside world, I think is highly variable. And so for me, I am still working. Work is busy. It can totally reach me at home, and it's successful in doing that. My husband is still working. He's very busy. Both our kids are home. They are just as active as ever. And so it's not like there's more breathing space. That's definitely not, I think I hear that from some people's experience. But there is an element of like a stillness in one sense. In mm-hmm. that I think actually, as if I think back to the pre-lockdown situation, moving out of the house, going to work, sitting down and having breakfast, that's actually one of my like most quiet and contemplative parts of the day. Then you kind of bounce from here to there, from there to your desk, there to back to work, and you're kind of moving between different situations all the time. And they're kind of balancing each other out in some way, or you're kind of trading off one kind of work or stress or expectation for another one. And then when you are sitting really still, physically still, and still all of these expectations and pressures are reaching you in the same place at the same time, you actually start to see them all together, feel them all together. And on the one hand, that's kind of overwhelming. Then on the other hand, if you can actually kind of sit still in the middle of it and see it all for what it is, it's quite testing, I think is maybe the word. But it's a different perspective. And instead of kind of escaping from one to the other, maybe you actually try and sit upright amongst it all, face it all at once. Mm-hmm. So if I make it through all this, functioning person, I think that's another kind of silver lining.
Did you connect at all with what I said earlier about it being a musical period? Like I've found that, yeah, maybe it's there's a kind of stillness in a routine that's, for me, it's been like, I hear music sometimes. Even when there is noise in the house, mm-hmm. it doesn't have the same it has more of a tenor to it, less of a strident tone. How did the sounds of your children strike you these days, Craig?
It's a patchwork of different genres and paces. There are definitely some kind of happy musical moments. We do have outside space that we can go and play with, and sometimes it's amazing. The kids are 4 and 7, so uh-huh. They're kind of able to play with each other at points, and they do have these magic little moments when you see these little people doing their thing and inhabiting the world. There are then other moments when we're all just kind of at each other and you're trying to get work done and they're kicking and screaming. It's very intense overlapping of everybody's needs and desires all at once. That's a cacophony. Yeah. Maybe there's a word for
a cacophony.
A music.
Yeah.
There is also literally music in the house, though, and that's quite nice. I think you also talked about kind of intimacy, I think was another theme you were using there, Brenda. That kind of came to mind as well. It's definitely a lot of intimacy involved. Each other with these kind of overlapping demands that are placed on you, all suddenly seeing, feeling them all at the same time in the same place, maybe helps to become more intimate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your talk, Travis.
Okay. Any last questions or comments?
I would just like to thank you all for being here this evening. It's just been so, so wonderful.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.